All right, the next matter we've got on this morning is docket number 66761, Nation Star Mortgage versus Rodriguez. Are we ready to go?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. All right, Mr. Schnitzer, if you'd come on up.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court. My name is Gary Schnitzer of the firm of Kravitz, Schnitzer & Jensen here in Las Vegas, and I represent the appellants in this matter. This appeal arises out of a petition for judicial review of a foreclosure mediation that took place before Judge Delaney. The foreclosure arose after Ms. Rodriguez strategically defaulted on her home loan in December of 2009 and has failed to make any payments since that time.
When you say strategically, what do you mean by that?
The record indicated that that Ms. Rodriguez could not afford the payments on her house, and she believed the only way to get a modification was to default on her payments.
Okay.
Wasn't there something in the record saying she was advised that if she defaulted on her payments, she could possibly be considered? That was her representation?
Her representation was that she spoke to unknown people within different loan servicers that had said the only way to get a loan modification under those circumstances was to default. And my recollection was there was no documentation to support that. After the evidentiary hearing in this matter, the appellants were sanctioned a total of $100,000, and the court is presently considering an award of attorney's fees for an additional $90,000.
As you made a jump from one point to the next, don't we have some underlying history as to some documents that weren't properly presented, or there were allegations of submission of improper documents originally and then in another proceeding?
Yes, Your Honor. And I will address that. At the mediation, which occurred in October of 2011, this was the third mediation. Two other mediations had occurred, neither of which Nation Star had attended. In this mediation that is the subject of the PJR, it was advised by Nation Star to both the mediator and to opposing counsel that Nation Star did not have the required documents it needed to proceed at the mediation. However, Nation Star did say that they were prepared to go forward with the mediation and to negotiate a modified home loan, irrespective of the fact that they did not have the required documents at that time. Nation Star asked for another continuance because they didn't have the requested or required documents, and that was denied by both counsel and by the mediator.
Do I misunderstand then that it appears in the record that you don't contest the district court's finding that you failed, or your client failed, to present a person with authority?
That is not correct. That is not correct. We did present a person with authority with counsel. What we did not have were the required documents.
When there was an allegation of altered documents under that.
That's correct.
So the record at page 13, 9AA of 2832 would be incorrect.
That's correct, Your Honor.
If I understand this in the proper context, what we have in front of us all today is the issue. This is a petition for judicial review that allegedly or in fact was filed after the 30-day period, not a separate action in fraud.
That's correct, Your Honor. The the mediation occurred on October 6, 2011. The mediator's statement was issued on October 11, 2011, and the petition for judicial review was not filed until July 22, 2013, which is 20 months later. Now, it's our position that nothing changed in between the time of the mediation, the mediator's statement being issued, and the filing of the petition for judicial review. Counsel knew, and Ms. Rodriguez knew, as even before the mediation took place, that NationStar would not be appearing with the documents that were required. That was a known fact. It was also known that NationStar had asked for continuance, but and said that they were going to come with some documents, but those documents were uncertified and could not be relied on for any purpose. They were going to bring the documents to show that there was authority for NationStar to act in this manner. The fallback position that respondents have is that they didn't quite know that there was this alteration or unexplained endorsement on the note. But even that argument has to fail because that was brought up to the respondent in the motion for summary judgment on the judicial foreclosure on the judicial foreclosure. And even that was more than 35 days after the respondent knew that there was an endorsement that was erroneous. So the statute, the rules are clear. It says that all such petitions shall be filed within 30 days of the date of the parties to the mediations receive the mediator statement. That's Rule 21-2. There's no exception to that. This is a clear, unambiguous rule, and there's no provision for an extension of that rule.
Mr. Schnitzer, I'm just curious, I was reading Judge Delaney's order. How did she deal with that issue on the timeliness of the petition for judicial review?
She says she was not bound by that rule to make her decision. It really wasn't very clear. I don't want to misrepresent what she said or the context in which she said it.
But she wasn't bound by the foreclosure mediation, was adopted by the Supreme Court.
Correct.
Okay.
And so.
So let's say there's a true case of fraud in terms of, let's just hypothetically, so we don't have to argue that. There was, they misrepresented the balance due on the loan or something, and they knew it, and it was an act of cunning to make the mediation fail. And the homeowner didn't know that they accepted this and they realized they couldn't possibly salvage their home. So time passes, more than 30 days passes. The foreclosing lender would have gotten a certificate to allow them to proceed at that point, right? When the 30 days passes, they get the certificate, correct?
Correct.
Could the homeowner, like, sue to set aside the certificate as having been fraudulently obtained or something like that?
I believe they could, but understand, Your Honor, this was not the case in this case.
This case is a straight judicial petition for judicial review. That was how this action was brought. Is that correct?
That's correct. And all parties were told the documents that were presented were not certified and therefore were not.
I understand that point. I'm more interested in the law associated with a petition for judicial review pursuant to a rule that says it must be filed within 30 days of the mediator statement. I'm paraphrasing, obviously. But there is no discovery rule built into that at all, correct?
There's no discovery rule. It is, in this evidentiary setting, this was almost trial by ambush because my client didn't understand until the date of the evidentiary hearing that there was going to be evidence gathered for the purposes of a punitive award, such as the court award in this case.
Because it's a judicial review of what happened.
Correct. And please understand, there's no underlying record. There's no transcript. There's
no discovery.
There's no indication of what the issues are going to be. There's really just three factors. The mediator statement, and the witness and the attorney's recollection of what happened at the mediation. That's it.
Can you clear something up for me? And it could be just a misperception on my part, and perhaps you may not be familiar with this part of the action. There's an indication the Bank of New York filed a motion or filed for judicial foreclosure.
Right.
And then summary judgment motion was pursued and it was denied. Do you know the status of that?
My understanding is that case has been closed.
Okay.
That's my understanding.
All right. Thank you.
But it is important to note, Your Honor, and I just want to make this point again, is that the original note which gave rise to this claim of a forgery or unauthorized signature was presented to the respondent on June 18, 2013 at that hearing, but the PJR was not filed until July 22, 2013, which is about 35 days even after they knew about the endorsement issue.
Mr. Schnitzer, did you want to save some time?
I did, Your Honor.
How much?
5 minutes, if I could.
This is very important. Before you sit down.
Okay.
If for some reason we concluded that it was appropriate that the court enter a ruling on this judicial, petition for judicial review, what's your position as to the imposition of sanctions, so to speak, or damages by the court, this award? Was that proper or improper?
I think, to answer quite directly, the sanctions should be that my client didn't bring the proper documentation to the mediation. And we could have left it at that and not brought any documents, but we did bring documents that we thought would be helpful in the mediation, and we continued with the mediation by offering a loan modification, which was rejected.
Could the court have awarded any penalty, i.e. the funds that they had awarded, the $1,500,000? Could they have done anything like that?
I think that's clearly punitive, Your Honor. I think what the rules anticipated was what is the borrower out because the lender didn't show up with the documents. So I think those would be limited to attorney's fees and costs as a result of the failure of the lender to bring those documents to the mediation, not this arbitrary award of $100,000, which clearly took into evidence the financial condition of my client, along with issues that were presented in prior mediations and the subsequent foreclosure action.
Thank you.
But the bad faith aspect of it, again, looking at the rule, is it that narrow?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite
understand. The sanction aspect of the rule, is it really that narrow?
I think there is some leeway, but I think in this case, the court overstepped its bounds in considering the financial condition of my client and considering prior mediations in which my client never appeared.
In which case you're delegating or you're designating that as more of a punitive aspect damage analysis.
Why else would it be relevant to ask what my client's gross income was for certain years?
I know I'm chewing into your time and I'm going to give you an extra 2 minutes. But I just want to understand that your basis the district court having no jurisdiction was the fact that petition was filed in an untimely manner.
It was untimely, and they knew exactly what the issues were even before they attended mediation.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions for him at this point?
Thank you.
And I'm going to add 2 more minutes to your time also.
May it please the court, Karen Navarre on behalf of the respondent, Catherine Rodriguez. I'm also here with my co-counsel from the Legal Aid Center of Southern Nevada, Venetia Considine. This case rests solely on the fairness and the purpose of the program to create a forum for the bank and the homeowner to have a meaningful negotiation. And the rules of this court guide the parties with regard to their participation in the program. In this particular case, Ms. Rodriguez was not aware of the bad faith conduct of the bank to the egregiousness of that conduct until there was a motion for summary judgment hearing where a note was presented and all of the facts of the puzzle fit together.
Counsel, where do we, or how should we approach the 30-day requirement to bring the judicial review petition?
Well, if you look at the September 5th order show cause hearing that Judge Delaney held, she applied equitable tolling and the discovery rule with regards to a tolling of that 30 days. If this court upholds a fixed and
fast...
But
where does she find the authority to do her equitable tolling? And is, and is this something that is equitable in the first place?
The inherent discretionary powers of the court to rule and to make... as this court knows, as the mediation program evolved, the case law evolved, to not only change the rules of the program, but to guide the courts with regards to their interpretations of what sanctions are appropriate and not. The Casillas case gave us the factors of the court's non-exhaustive list of determining what bad faith is. I think it's well within the inherent discretionary powers of the court to reach over to other litigation cases and apply the same reasoning and analysis as this court has upheld in other similar equitable tolling arguments. In response to the reply brief, we looked at cases where equitable tolling has been applied. In the Siragosa versus Brown case, this court found that when there is an issue of equitable tolling and a discovery rule, it's an issue of fact, and it isn't a de novo review by the Supreme Court. Rather, it's did the court have substantial evidence to make that determination that equitable tolling was fair, and when the discovery rule triggers, is based on that issue of fact that the court will review.
The court, the case that you're using is a discovery case. This is not a discovery situation.
I agree, Your Honor, but to hold a 30-day fixed rule would then incentivize the banks to falsify documents, make certain representations at mediation, such as they did in this case, saying that NationStar was, the testimony supports in the record that NationStar said at mediation, we just bought the loan, we're servicing it, and we own it. That's the representation that was made. Their corporate witness that testified wasn't present at the mediation. Daniel Marks was present. They could have bought him. They didn't. The attorney that testified that was present, she said she was unsure what was said. She couldn't
recall. Wouldn't a suit in fraud have been a better vehicle to use if that was in fact the case?
Well, in hearing lies the law with regards to not only that order to show cause hearing, but in our briefing to this court, the bank would have the courts believe that their conduct, including the document presentation at mediation, can only be reviewed in a petition for judicial review. They can't have it both ways. They can't argue as a defense to the motion for summary judgment, hey, you can't bring these documents in, you can't bring in our bad faith, because it can only be reviewed within a PJR. Then get inside the PJR and say, hey, you can't accuse us of fraud, because the fraud claim lies within the district court. They're using the rules of the foreclosure mediation program as a sword and shield. And the whole premise of this court's rulings on cases has been to show fairness.
Was there any challenge to the summary judgment order? I thought the summary judgment order was denied and the case was left open for adjudication.
The case was statistically closed for failure to prosecute. They did not move forward with that case.
Did you seek a Rule 11 sanction against the NationStar or against the counsel in the summary judgment judicial foreclosure action?
We did not, Your Honor. Instead, we
wouldn't that have been a reasonable alternative for this alleged fraudulent representation that had previously occurred?
The evidence that we would have needed to prevent that would have been precluded by the confidentiality rule within the mediation program that says the documents and the conduct of the parties can't be used against them in other proceedings. So the only vehicle was a petition for judicial review process. That was the only way to address it without risking a procedural bar against my client for addressing blatant fraud.
Do you have any cases at all where a petition for judicial review with a time limit, 30 days in this case, has been subjected to a discovery rule for purposes of tolling that 30-day period? It's a review of what happened elsewhere, and it's a pretty limited proceeding. And I can't think of any Nevada case where there has been a tolling provision on a petition for judicial review such as you're advocating here?
Well, I believe this is the case that should create that establishment.
So the answer to my question is you don't know of any case where this has been done?
In the context of a foreclosure mediation, no, Your Honor.
Or a petition for judicial review more broadly?
I don't believe we came across that in research.
Yes, okay, thank you.
Well, and again, going back to the jurisdictional issue, this court has recognized in Micon Gaming versus Espinoza that the jurisdictional issue or this court's never applied a discovery rule to any type of petition for judicial review and establish an equitable tolling for jurisdictional purposes.
I understand that, Your Honor. However, in other petitions for judicial review, there's an actual record. There's a recording, there's a transcript, there's an opportunity to cross-examine witnesses in a manner that's entirely different than the way the petition for judicial review has functioned within the foreclosure mediation program. So I believe a ruling in this case in favor of equitable tolling could be distinguished from other types of administrative measures because we don't have that record below. I believe in this particular case, had the respondent been able to challenge the veracity of the documents, like this case, the case of Wood, that recently the Supreme Court issued findings that said that you can't confine a mediation to just the 4 hours. The part of the exchange of documents is meaningful to what happens at that mediation. And so these limitations, the more you confine the conduct that's being reviewed, the more the outliers of the bad faith gets left out of the argument. And in this particular case, I believe equitable tolling, Judge Delaney went to a great extent exploring that during the September 5th hearing, and I would direct the court to the transcript of that, where she makes the determination that Ms. Rodriguez was not seeking an imposition of sanctions based on what the mediator statement said, because the mediator statement's inaccurate. The mediator statement says they simply didn't bring the documents, but they tried in good faith, and Nation Star was the owner. That was false. There was no way possible within the 30 days for Ms. Rodriguez to determine whether or not NationStar had falsely represented its ownership status at the mediation until after the fact.
And again, why wouldn't that be, going back to Justice Pickering's question, why wouldn't that be more amenable to a fraud claim? Considering the context of foreclosure mediation as a whole and what was to be accomplished by the rules that were set in place.
Because of the rule regarding confidentiality of the conduct of the parties of the mediation. If that rule is imposed and prevents the use of the test of the discussions at mediation and the documents at mediation, you file a fraud claim, and now the bank comes in with a motion to dismiss, saying that you cannot prosecute these claims because of the confidentiality.
So, Ms. Newberry, let's assume for the moment that, hypothetically, the court says that you can overcome the 30-day requirement. Separate and apart from that, when the court is ruling on this question, this motion to dismiss the petition for judicial review because it lacks jurisdiction, does the court have an independent basis for imposing Rule 11 sanctions in the context of that motion?
I believe it does, Your Honor. And similarly, in this case, Judge Delaney reaches the finding fact that the parties had a pattern and practice of using falsified documents, not only in the mediations, but in that judicial foreclosure, but also in response to the petition. The response in this case, if the court looks at it within the appendix, contains a copy of the endorsement from the imaging file that is the very thing that we're arguing about in this case. So they hadn't learned from receiving that original note, realizing that it was different, to file that in with regards to this. Nor did they file that NationStar LLC document that was actually provided at the mediation. So she finds that finding in fact within the petition for judicial review, and we discuss that even when a court doesn't have subject matter jurisdiction, they can still impose sanctions for misconduct that they perceive in the proceedings, whether or not they ultimately can rule on the merits of the case.
So the sanctions in that context would be under Rule 11, as I understand your argument.
Correct, Your Honor. However, the petition for judicial review process isn't... I think the problem here is the presumption is that the parties don't lie and they don't fabricate documents. And that when they appear at mediation saying that they're in ownership status, we believe them on their merits.
Let's assume for the moment that a judge who is lacking in subject matter jurisdiction but can nevertheless impose Rule 11 sanctions in response to a motion to dismiss based upon false documents presented in the context of the motion to dismiss and the prior proceedings. What provides the basis in Rule 11 for the $100,000 sanction over and above an award of attorney's fees and costs?
I think it's the egregiousness of the conduct. It's the lack of integrity for the running of the system with the courts.
So Rule 11 allows for an imposition of sanctions that are based upon the financial condition of Nation Star? That seems to have been the thrust of the trial judge's focus.
Well, in our interpretation upon review of the order issued in this case is that Judge Delaney did not take into account the financial conditions. A $4 billion corporation receiving a sanction of $50,000 is frivolous. It isn't meaningful. Now, for an average or ordinary median income, it would be meaningful.
Isn't that a punitive damage aspect in the analysis?
We made the argument in our closing arguments. We tried to make that argument, but I think Judge Delaney ignored it. And in her findings, in fact, and conclusions of law, she makes no fashioning of a sanction based on a calculation. She makes no mention of what their gross income was. I don't believe it factored into her decision. We were actually expected a much greater sanction based on the conduct of the parties and repeated fabrication of documents and a systematic theme within Nation Star and Bank of New York Mellon to do whatever it takes to get through the mediation program but not meaningfully negotiate. And along the way, that clearly appears within the district court order. I can completely agree with you. That's right in front of us in several paragraphs of her order. But I want to go back to the hypothetical that we left a little while ago. We assumed that there was some way to get around the 30-day jurisdiction requirement. And you said, well, she carefully considered it. Where in the same district court order that you were talking about sanctions does it say that she established her jurisdiction based upon those findings? I agree, it's absent in the order, but it wasn't a show cause hearing which resulted in an order for an evidentiary hearing. And there are instances where the Supreme Court has found that while an order may not be in written form, if the order is made from the bench, can be taken into consideration with regards to the construct. And so while it's absent from written form in the findings of fact and conclusions of law, the transcript from September 5th of 2013 clearly showed that Judge Delaney made the determination that she had jurisdiction based on an equitable tolling aspect with regards to 30 days and therefore found it to be timely filed. And so the
authority for that was just her inherent authority to do equity in her courtroom.
I believe so, Your Honor. That was the explanation that was provided at the time of the hearing, and she did allow both sides, including both bank attorneys that appeared at that hearing, to make that determination.
But you just indicated, and this going back to Justice Souter's question about non-findings in the order, you just indicated that the basis for determining the Nation Star's financial condition wasn't punitive in nature, and that wasn't indicated in the order either. Why would we consider that?
I don't believe that the award was punitive. I think the argument was made during the hearing, but Judge Delaney
the finding was never there.
Judge Delaney did not find that persuasive.
But in her case, we should consider it, and in the punitive case, we shouldn't consider it.
I think I'm being clear. In Judge Delaney's determination at the order to show cause hearing, she made the oral determination that she had jurisdiction based on equitable tolling. There was no order that was issued, but it's in the transcript with regards to her statements. With regards to the punitive damages, there was no oral statement that she was making a punitive damage award. We made the argument that she should, but in her findings, in fact, in conclusions of law, there's no mention of the income or the financial conditions of the parties. She simply cites to various cases and the different types of equities that a court can consider with regards to fashioning a sanction. But there's no calculation in her conclusion of law that says that she concluded that her damages were based on the financial conditions. We believe this court should adopt our argument and reasoning, but I don't believe the lower court did.
That's why everything should be indicated in the orders. Sure makes our job a lot easier.
I can appreciate that, Your Honor. One thing I would like to draw attention to the court, because it has been misrepresented in the reply brief, MetLife was a party to this case. They're named as the second party within the petition for judicial review. They make the argument in their brief that MetLife was never included, and therefore the conduct of the non-party was factored into the determination. It simply isn't true. Not only were they named in caption, but they were specifically laid out within the petition as having been a party to the case. They failed to appear. They failed to defend themselves. But there was a stipulation later on in the case that NationStar was acting as an agent on behalf of Bank of New York Mellon, and we would align under agency theory that MetLife conduct would carry to Bank of New York Mellon, and that's where we believe that Judge Delaney reached the determination that sanctions were appropriate against both of them because there was a pattern of practice. The other issue is this loan modification. It was never offered. If the court reviews the transcript, Ms. Rodriguez testifies that she was never offered a loan modification at the October 2011 mediation. Furthermore, Ms. Morales, if you only read the first sentence where she says she was offered a loan mod, I can understand where they may have reached that conclusion. But if you continue to read the testimony, Ms. Lindsay Bennett Morales testifies that we offered a loan modification. We were waiting on an escrow analysis. And once we got the escrow analysis, we would have offered her a loan modification that would have been at 24%. That loan modification was never offered at the mediation. There were no meaningful negotiations. Ms. Rodriguez offered, and her testimony supports in the record, she offered a loan modification that mimicked the HAMP guidelines, and the NationStar employee said he didn't have the authority to do that. Now, Mr. Marks told the mediator that he not only was there representing as the servicer, but he was representing as the beneficiary, and that there was an issue with documents catching up to prove all of that. That goes towards the very heart of what transpired at mediation, and that was not information that could have been known to the respondent in this case until the summary judgment hearing when the note was presented. We finally knew who actually owned the note and who was in a position to enforce it. That information was concealed, and I do not believe that the banks in this case should be rewarded for their misconduct, their deceit, their abuse of the program, and their absolute recalcitrant view towards the laws in the state.
To be clear there was no petition for judicial review following the second mediation at which the uncertified documents were tendered as the documents.
At the third mediation, October 2011.
Second mediation.
The second mediation. No, a petition for judicial review was not filed after the second mediation, Your Honor, because we had just been before Judge Rosen previously, and he had ruled that a certificate would not issue. He wouldn't issue any other types of sanctions, and the conduct was similar. And at that time, we had no reason to know or believe that those certifications had been falsified.
But it was at the second mediation where the uncertified documents were tendered.
No, there were certified documents tendered to the second mediation. Ms. Schuller hence testifies with regards to her office's creation of the certifications that were presented. The issue at the second mediation was the note was incomplete. There was no endorsement.
Okay. Okay, colleagues, any other questions? No? All right. Counsel, thank you for your excellent arguments today. This matter will stand submitted. The court.
You're going to allow him
time to... I gave you two more minutes, didn't I?
Thank you, Your Honor. I just want to touch on a few brief issues brought up by counsel. This issue of equitable tolling really does not apply in this case because the respondent had two opportunities to file a timely PJR under the best of circumstances. One would have been after the mediation of October 6, 2011, and the other would have been the respondent had the actual physical wet signed note at the foreclosure hearing. They didn't act in that case even on a timely basis. So they blew the 30 days from the mediation. They blew the 30 days even if you allow them to go back in time from the time they actually had actual knowledge of that wet signed note. They didn't do it. The 30 days is important because there's an absence of a record below. The longer you go out from the 30 days, the chance of getting an accurate record of what happened at the mediation decreases every day. Again, there's only the mediator statement and the recollection of what happened at the mediation. that is...
So, counsel, you disagree with the representation made by the respondent in this case that the reason that 30 days works in other situations where the petition for judicial review is filed within 30 days is precisely because there's the likelihood of a much bigger record. You're saying exactly the opposite, that it's because there is no record here that 30 days is essential.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. And that there should be no discovery assumed within that 30-day period.
Well, that's the problem with the way the program is set up. It's inherent in the program. There's no discovery. There's no understanding if you are the lender and the borrower brings an action for a petition for judicial review, what the issues are going to be at the hearing. The court doesn't tell you what the issues are. In this case, it was basically a free-for-all. There was evidence of prior mediations, acts of other parties that were not parties to this mediation. There was evidence of financial condition of the lender, and you can go on and on and on at an evidentiary.
But you know, based on these very same rules, the foreclosure mediation rules, that the petition would necessarily be limited to the conduct of the bank in its good faith, the accuracy or legitimacy of the documents, not much more.
At the mediation,
right.
Not at prior mediations.
Even accepting that, if you, as I understand what record we have, you re-presented the same fraudulent, they call it fraudulent, you call it uncertified and a mistake note. Was that just presented as your response to the petition for judicial review and argued as a substantive basis to dismiss the petition for judicial review? So the question is harkening back to the earlier question of whether or not, even if the 30 days, even if we credit your argument that the 30 days is mandatory, you cannot, even in the context of a petition that's filed without subject matter jurisdiction, the court still has authority over the lawyers and the presentation of the parties that they make to the court substantively in the context of deciding whether the case should be dismissed. You would agree with that, right?
That I would agree with, but I don't think it would be within the context of the petition for judicial review. I think it would be, if there's going to be a sanction for you, either counsel or party for fostering documents which were inappropriate, that would be in a different context. Because in this context, there is no discovery. There's no issue. There's no ability of the parties to determine what the issues are going to be at the hearing. That's just the practical side of it.
Okay. So from your practical side, in the first instance, they should have brought an action, in essence, for fraud, to set aside the award and the certificate because of alleged fraud.
They could have, but here's the problem with that.
What I'm looking at is just curious. We're talking about rewarding bad behavior of coming to the mediation, violating the spirit of it, and now letting us to pat the bank on the head and saying that's okay, they can misrepresent and get away with it. On one hand, we are also struck with kind of the abuse of the district court. They call them sanctions, but they seem to be more punitive in nature. And trying to balance this out to have a procedure that works and doesn't congest the legal system with unnecessary litigation.
It's difficult to give you an answer because those aren't quite the facts as what happened here.
In a simple way, yes, it was the facts that happened here.
Because
they came with the wrong documents,
right.
And so they presented them as being bona fide documents, whether they knew or didn't know. A certificate then is issued because they're not granting a mediation, or going allowing them to refi or do anything else.
Well, in this case, Your Honor, a couple of very key issues or key facts. Number one, we went there telling everybody these are not documents you can rely on. And an element of fraud is justifiable reliance. If you can't rely on it, you can't justifiably rely on it, it can't be fraud. We weren't there seeking a certificate of foreclosure. We were there to foster the mediation program, and that is offer the borrower a loan modification, which we did. That's the context in which we think these facts occurred. The fact that later on it was shown that the document we said you can't rely on was shown to be unreliable is exactly why we said that before we even mediated.
It was okay for you to keep using those unreliable documents.
I don't believe we did in this case, Your Honor, because at the time of the foreclosure action, the correct document was presented to the court. And then
that's what triggered the discovery.
That's what triggered the output of the
exactly.
So that's the framework of the context of the time sequence of what happened. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel. We appreciate your arguments.